It's Thursday, and that means it's time to talk to a professional who would never forget a name.
So, I wish your son Miller all the best.
My name is Noah!
Why? Because his voice is so velvety smooth.
Yo, Vanilla, kick it one time, boy.
It makes the girls go...
Oh, my.
He's a rapper so fly.
Philadelphia, born and raised. On the playground is where I spent most of my days. Chilling out, laxing, relaxing, or cooling, or shooting some b-ball outside of the school.
He makes Eminem want to cry. It's the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Heaney.
The hairbrush is my microphone, and I'd be jamming out, looking in the mirror, acting out their songs on bended knee. Point is, I love Boyz II Men.
Right now, on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency at 118 North Mill and Beloit. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Call them at 738-5701.
Why, yes, it is time for the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Heaney, brought to you as always every Thursday on the Sports Ticket by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill and Beloit, or call them at 738-5701. Here's how messed up I am right now. I can't even figure out what day of the week it is. And then I'm sitting there like, oh, I have a cut. I'm going to pull up and I'm going to play Haney. And all of a sudden I'm like, wait a minute, that's Jimmy. No. Actually, it would have been Haney because that would have been Tuesday when KU played Creighton. But see, what's throwing me off, Brian Haney, is playing afternoon games, top 10 matchups on a Tuesday afternoon with 2,500 fans at 4 o'clock. I'm confused, man.
Yeah, that's definitely not the norm. And yet, if that's the kind of fun we're going to have and the outcome we're going to get, bring on these Tuesday matinees as often as you like. That was easily the most fun we've had all year. And when I say all year, I mean all year, not season. That was just an absolute blast. And obviously, winning up in Indianapolis was fun versus Kentucky. That was thrilling. But there was zero fans, so there was zero atmosphere, and it was almost just kind of weird. You could hear everything being said on the floor. This one on Tuesday, it opened with intrigue from the atmosphere standpoint because it felt like there were almost as many Creighton fans there as there were KU fans. It was probably maybe 500 or 600 Creighton fans out of the 2,500. But then as KU got going, you felt the roar of the crowd, and it was amazing how much noise they made for being such a small number compared to our normal 16,300. And I don't know if that's the acoustics of the building or what, but it was awesome and had a blast with it. To see Kansas feed off that energy and protect the home floor. And it's just astounding to think that in Bill Self's 18 years here, he has just 14 home losses. And there's another example of a game that they find a way to win. And as I said on the post game, I don't think we win without those 2,500 fans. I really don't. I think they put just enough pressure on Creighton throughout, especially on those last free throws, the final one that Zegarowski misses. And it was good to have that sixth man, albeit different, and certainly at an unusual time, 4 p.m., but it was great to have that sixth man back in the fog.
I feel so bad, so now I've got it pulled up. Here was the call that Brian had when it came down the final free throw.
With the right hand, he missed it. Rebound tipped about, and KU's going to win this game.
Wow.
You can rock. Chalk it up. The Jayhawks win. The All-American misses, and Kansas escapes.
What's great about that cut, of course, you did a wonderful job, as always, but the other thing that was great about that cut, you could hear the fans in the background, as you mentioned,
yeah,
the 2,500.
Yeah.
So that came out loud and clear, and of course, would have been even bigger if there were 16,300. But I want to talk about the end of this game, because Jalen Wilson is not afraid to take any shot, and by the way, McCormick had a great pass right to the shooter's pocket from the post. I think it was Brown, a nice look in the McCormick, and then he kicked it out, and Wilson hit the three, and that was the game winner, 73-70. But then Wilson fouls Creighton's best player, and then he goes to the line for three free throws with 1 second left. I know there's a lot to unpile here. Let's start with the ball movement to get Wilson that wide-open look, and then Wilson, of course, with the stones that he's had already this year and just not afraid of the moment at all.
Yeah, well, you said it. David McCormick had the key pass, and this is on a day where he looked like the best version of himself we've ever seen in the first 20 minutes, demanding the ball, being a big presence inside. He was getting deep catches and finishing with aggressiveness, not the typical, pull-up jumpers from 15 feet or baby hooks because he's trying to shoot over you. He was getting inside position on the block, demanding the ball, turning around and scoring with contact or throwing down dunks or whatever. And I think Creighton did a nice job to make some adjustments in the second half to force him further out on the catch so that he had to fall back on the jump baby hooks, you know, that did not go in at all in the second half. He had no second half field goals. But I give you all that as a backdrop to say that a lot of big men that are kind of coming into their own and trying to make up for lost time, and by that I mean a rough start to the season for him, probably catching that ball underneath the goal would have tried to catch their balance, turn around and dunk it or score over somebody. But in that split second, he remembered something that Bill Self's been driving home in his mind these last few weeks in the preseason and leading up to the first couple of weeks of the season, that he's at his best when he's got inside position and he's got his physical foundation, his lower legs set and about him. He's at his worst when he's off balance and he tries to make, you know, up for that with some kind of hurried shot or an off balance shot or whatever. The thing that made Udoka great was, and you know, he got so many seals inside and then would just catch and throw down these thunderous jams. And sometimes David can be knocked offline because he's just not quite as strong in the base yet, and then he'll try to score anyway. Well, if you go back and look at it, like this catch and quick pass by him, he was very much off balance. But he heard his coach's message loud and clear. Don't force up some kind of scoring attempt there. If you don't have a shot or if you don't have your balance and your base about you, look for somebody who does. And so that quick ball movement and that decision in a split-second notice, knowing that, hey, I need to score. I haven't scored all half, but I'm not in a great position to score, even though I'm close to the basket. It's kind of an awkward angle. I'm off balance. Let me kick it. That was the best thing he could have done. Even if Jalen misses the shot, mm-hmm. that's the best thing David could have done because it shows recognition of what the coaches are telling him he needs to work on. And he got praise from the head coach afterwards. So that's your setup to the shot. And the shot itself, I'm so amazed that this is the three-point shooter we're getting out of him. And, you know, 4 of 6 from three on Tuesday, he continues to take shots that you don't expect him to be taking. And a couple of times in this first six-game stretch, you know, we've seen Coach Self get on him for taking a shot that was either early in the clock or they could have got it, you know, two passes later. But the thing is, he's hit enough of them now that he's pretty much got the green light. And I don't know, man. I knew he could shoot it heading into the season, but I don't think anybody thought he would have this type of assertiveness from that range on the floor. Maybe the assertiveness from 15 feet and in, maybe the assertiveness to put the ball on the ground and make something happen off the bounce, but not like this. I mean, he's pulling the trigger on threes in all kinds of big game instances. Think about the two he hit back-to-back versus Kentucky a week ago. And I told you the first one was one of those, no. Yes, yeah. Type feelings, because it's like, what are you doing taking that? But that's the type of competitor we're talking about here, Wade. His killer instinct, I think, has clearly emerged as the best on the team. Now, you could say Marcus Garrett's defensive mindset and his killer instinct in that regard is the best. But in terms of just like going out and getting his shot, whether it's three, whether it's off the bounce, the guy that has that mindset of I'm the baddest on the block, get out of my way, I'm going to go get mine, is Jalen right now. And it's not in a selfish way. It's in a confident, assertive way. And boy, oh boy, does Kansas need that when you're trying to replace two All-Americans from last season. And he does it in a way different way than both Dodd and Doak. But if we didn't have that, I think we would have got three losses right now. And I don't think that's a stretch at all.
No, I think you're right.
You know, we might have four losses right now. If we didn't have him stepping into that type of frame of mind and just grabbing the bull by the horns. And, you know, I don't know how many people sat around and debated this heading into the season. Who's going to be our killer instinct go-to guy? But he would have been like seventh or maybe fifth, somewhere in that range on the list in having that debate before you got to Jalen Wilson's name. I probably right in between. I would have picked, you know, the likes of Garrett and Abaji and Brown. And it's tougher from a big man position, but David McCormick, Bill Self was talking about All-American season. I would have picked all those guys in front of him, and you probably would have picked the McDonald's All-American, Bryce Thompson, in front of him, yeah. And maybe the junior college best player in Tyon Grant Foster in front of him, and then yet here he is. Look what he's doing. It's really remarkable.
It is. 23 points, 10 rebounds, and the game-winning shot against Creighton. Brian Haney, voice of Jayhawks, brought to you every Thursday by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill and Beloit, or give them a call, 738-5701. I know KU fans rejoiced when the Creighton point guard missed the last free throw, but I'm going to tell you, and I've seen this before, and I feel for kids, and I'm the dad of a kid that's a freshman now. He was at a free throw contest, and my stomach was churning when I knew he needed to make his last five to stay alive in a free throw competition, okay? And that's nothing compared to a game, because you don't want to let your team down when you're shooting free throws at the end of a contest, especially when you know you have to make all of them. And last year, I covered a high school girls game, and it was a sub-state first-round game, and the Minneapolis girl was a senior, and she played great, and if not for her, they wouldn't have been in the situation. Got fouled with like a second left, had two free throws, down two. She made the first, missed the second, and that was her career. That was it. That's the last game she ever played, and I felt horrible for her, even though she was playing for the opposing team that I was covering. What about you? I mean, you watch, you're bleeding the crimson and blue. Of course, you want KU to win, and I think if you would tell some people like myself, hey, if that kid makes all three, cool, as long as KU wins in overtime. But you're not assured that you're going to win in overtime. I think KU would have, because they're at home and just good things happen. But who knows? Maybe they would have lost. It's a Debbie Downer when you foul and the guy makes three free throws. But I have to admit, I was kind of pulling for the guy so that we would have overtime, have some extra basketball, because they're two of the best teams in the country. And I still think KU would have won. Now, some people, of course, many people disagree, go, come on, man, KU fan, you want that guy to miss it. No, I'm talking the human element of it. I mean, they showed mom in the stands, you know, she was about to pull her hair out, and he makes the first two, and the third free throw was not a bad free throw. He didn't choke it. It was just a hair too strong. Yeah, Christian Brown missed a free throw. I thought he pulled the string on that one, and that was short, and he felt the pressure, no doubt, of that moment. I thought you could tell it, and perhaps the point guard Creighton did on that very last one after he made the first two, like, okay, this is the one I got to make for sure now, or we're going to lose. It's tremendous pressure. They practice these free throws over and over at all levels, but I just still feel for whoever it is, no matter who and what team they're playing for, in a high school, junior high, youth basketball, it doesn't matter, college, the pros, I kind of like, you know what, they get paid a ton of money to make those shots. But what about you? How do you feel about that type of situation? Do you almost feel like after KU won, you're relieved they won, but at the same time, like, man, I wish it just didn't come down to a guy missing a free throw?
Yeah, you know, you would have liked, first off, for Jalen's shot to be like the final moment. Yeah. You get a stop and it's over like that. You hate to have it be in anticlimactic fashion like that, where somewhat controversial whistle on the foul to begin with, and then
of course if Brown makes the free throw, if Brown makes one of two, you know, he had front end, then he
doesn't
have
matter, right? Yeah, you're talking about it. Yeah. Yeah. And I agree with you that I think Kansas probably would have won in overtime, but as loud as the 2,500 fans were, it's not the same home court advantage it usually is, mm-hmm. and this team is not, you know, long enough in the tooth together,
yeah.
as their current unit. We've got veterans, don't get me wrong, but as a current unit, they haven't played enough together to where you just have that assurance that, oh, they're going to figure it out. Like, you know, those Devontae and Frank teams that had been to Elite Eights together before, you're like, okay, yeah, there's a run coming.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so there was no true assurance that we would. So to me, obviously, you're thrilled to see him miss it just to escape. And I take a lot of personal pride in that home court winning percentage for Bill Self. I say that as if I have anything to do with it. As a fan, I take a lot of pride in that because, I mean, 95% in almost two decades,
that's insane.
That's unreal. And if home court is worth like 3.5 or 4 points in the eyes of the odds makers, at Kansas, with a normal crowd, home court's worth 8.
Yeah.
And it's just really cool to see, as you said, how good things always seem to happen in that building. In West Virginia, and K-State fans would tell you that means we get whistles. And sometimes we do.
Yeah.
But I think more often than not, it's just this really imposing energy that causes opposition to wilt under pressure. It causes our guys to feed off that energy and really rise to the occasion. And to me, there's not another phenomenon like it that I've had a chance to experience in sports. And I've been at some cool football venues and seen it from the opponent eyes in those places, but there's no place like Allen Fieldhouse and the magic of that building. And I know that sounds awfully biased, but as someone that's been to every one of the top 10 college hoops venues and a couple of the really good football venues, I just think what we have is so special. And so I'm proud we were able to extend that home percentage for Bill. And it's only a home winning streak of 11 now, because Baylor got us last year at home back in January. But still, It's really special when you get those top 10 wins at home, and it's really special to see the accumulation of all wins that Celt has had in that building.
One more thing about the basketball team, then we'll turn to football before we let you go. Ochai Agbaji, 0-for-6 from the floor, wasn't in there at crunch time. It was Bryce Thompson, the freshman, instead. He did a nice job. 8 points, 17 minutes against Creighton. And that, you know, that's important for him to get that experience as a 6'5" freshman, highly touted freshman out of Oklahoma. But what about Agbaji? I mean, he had been playing well, averaging 16 a game. His outside shooting, still a little inconsistent, but he's been, I think, a better shooter this year so far. And then all of a sudden, just 6 shots, 0-for-6, didn't score, not out there in crunch time against Creighton.
Yeah, the not out there in crunch time is probably the most surprising part of everything you said. I think obviously 0-6 is surprising, but there's going to be nights like that. Heck, Devontae in his junior season and maybe once as a senior had a really, you know, surprising off night like that. They just come, and you have to find other ways to make your presence felt. And I think most nights he will, because he's such an athletic player that's typically a great on-ball defender. I've not talked to Coach about the decision to go with Bryce. I think he was riding the hot hand for the most part. But typically, Ochai, based on his defense, you would have on the floor. So, you know, to me, it's something he can quickly flush and move past, because, as you said, it wasn't just that he was averaging 16 a game. He was getting 16-plus a game in 4 of their 5 contests. I mean, it was a consistent 16. It wasn't like Christian Brown goes for 30 and then goes for single digits the next night. I mean, he was being steady Eddie. Every game, we're getting this much from Oach for the most part. So I think this is an outlier. Don't put too much stock in it, and I would expect him to bounce back in a big way tomorrow.
All right, and tomorrow, okay, you'll play Omaha pregame at 5:30 on Z96.3 at Lake, and then you can hear the Sunday game as well, 12:30 pregame against Tarleton State on Z96.3 at Lake. Football, KU's supposed to play Texas this weekend. They've moved that game now back a half an hour, which I need to change that as well on my sheet. 2:30 pregame, 3 o'clock kick now between Texas and KU coming up on Saturday. Let me ask you this, because it's a question I've heard from people as well. What are the benefits of playing this game for either side coming up on Saturday? But then if it indeed has to get postponed to December 19th, this is just my opinion, and it's worth 2 cents. If you don't play the game this weekend, call it good. Because the December 19th conference title games, nobody's even going to pay attention to it. I hate to say and be so rude, but it won't be a big deal for either school for that matter. So you pretty much better play it this weekend. But whether you play it this week or next weekend, what are the benefits of playing this game? A team that hasn't won a game all year. Yes, you have a final chance to win a game. I get that. And then Texas, who of course steamrolled K-State recently.
You know, I think for Kansas and Texas, there's enough reasons to get out there and try and play it, not to mention the TV dollars. Gosh, I can't remember the exact figures.
$3.5 million.
$3.5 million. So that's a big deal for the conference to try to get it in. But obviously, whether you believe Tom Herman's walking in lame duck status or not as a head coach, he wants to play it to try to improve his final record on his resume. And while it's not going to convince Texas otherwise of keeping him or not, what he does in Lawrence versus the last place Jayhawks, I think for his overall tenure there, for the next job for him, if that's exactly what's going to happen, he wants to play this game. Absolutely. Any game you have a chance to improve your standing, whatever you do in life, if you have one more chance to go out there and through that repetition, make yourself look better, you want to do it. From Kansas' standpoint, you know, you want to give these baby Hawks, as David Lawrence has been calling them, more of a chance to stretch their wings and grow and fly a little bit. And that's exactly what we're seeing for Kansas here of late. And so, you know, while we haven't gotten Jalen Daniels to play as we thought at one time he would, I mean, I really felt like after week two he was going to be the exclusive starter the rest of the season. And that's been a bit surprising. It was even surprising mid-game last week when the offense was sputtering that we didn't give him a look at some point. And I don't know what their plan will be if we do play, if Jalen's back out there, because I don't know how the practice week has gone yet. But that would be obviously a huge advantage. When you're talking about building toward the future, there's no position more important than that one to get additional repetitions and all that. So I think for all those reasons, when you've got 37 freshmen, 67 underclassmen, 24 true freshmen that have made their way onto the field, you want to give those guys one more chance to play. And if you've practiced all week, I mean, the reason why he practices is to play.
Sure.
So the worst thing would be to not be able to give these kids a chance to run out there, even if they're heavy underdogs, and even if it doesn't go your way. I think as much as fans might not be tuned in and as much as some fans might be ready to just turn the page on another season, it is building toward the future to give these guys any kind of in-game experience they can draw from later. And so if they're going to play the game, we're going to be excited to call it. And certainly, the way our defense played, I mean, Karam Prunty looks like a freshman All-American. He was just tremendous, had a hand in two takeaways last week and several passes defended. And when you have guys like that, and Terry and Harris up front to build around, I want to see those kids one more time this year. And for their own individual accolade, you know, chances, like I mentioned with Prunty being an All-American candidate in the freshman class, I want to give him one more chance to go out there and rack up a few more stats. And that may sound trivial in the big picture, but you know what? Those are the things you point to as silver linings when you're trying to build something from the ground up. And certainly the kid we call K-9, Karam Prunty, has become one of the bright spots you can really hang your hat on from 2020.
And you have a chance to knock off a brand name program in Texas, and that certainly would make your season if you can pull that off. That's coming up on Saturday as of now, 3 o'clock kick, 2:30 pregame. All right, time for the off-the-wall question. Brian, for one of the few times, he knows kind of what's coming this week on the off-the-wall. Breakdancing became an Olympic sport. It'll be in Paris in 2024. Brian and I are super excited about that. No baseball. That makes total sense. No baseball in the Olympics, but breakdancing is in 2024. So, Mr. Haney, what sport would you like to add to the Olympics? I've got a couple. A friend of mine told me beer pong. I'm like, yeah, I'd watch that. That'd be cool. What about the wife carrying contest? Have you seen that in certain states? They have a wife carrying contest. I think that would be hilarious. I would watch probably that more than I watch breakdancing. But what about you? Is there a sport that some unique sport or something odd or weird, or maybe it's just some regular sport that isn't in the Olympics that you say must be in the Olympics at some point in the future?
First off, I love the idea of beer pong because you can get different beers from all over the
world.
Yeah,
thank
you. And that kind of factors in, you know, an interesting twist. The Germans would have a great advantage because they can start drinking, I think, when they're like 14 in Germany.
That's 16. How it was, yeah. I had a foreign exchange student. He was on the tennis team. He was a good friend of mine. His name was Henning. And he told me what was great about Germany was he could go and buy beer anytime he wanted. I think it was 14 at that time. I don't know what it is now.
Yeah, it's crazy. So they would be conditioned athletes that had been training for, you know, seven more years than at least the legally trained ones in the U.S. But I think that would be interesting. You know, I'm a guy that every year watches the Nathan's Famous hot dog eating competition and have attended it live in person. I was there the year that Kobayashi was banned from competing. And you don't know this about me, and this is a little bit sacrilegious in the U.S. of A., but I'm actually a Kobayashi fan over Joey Chestnut, which I know sounds unpatriotic and un-American.
It does.
But I fell in love with Kobayashi's style and his pizzazz and his six straight that he won at the start of his career. I mean, he was the Michael Jordan, the Lance Armstrong, the whatever of competitive eating. So I was there 4 feet away from him when he tried to crash the stage and got body slammed up against a chain link fence. And I can't remember what year it was. It was like 2010 or something like that, and that was the end of his run because the IFOCE, which is the International Federation of Competitive Eating, aren't you impressed I know this?
I am.
They had ruled him out based on something that had happened prior to the event, and yet, you know, he's the big Goliath next to Chestnut, right? I mean, you don't want the Super Bowl without, you know, somebody great opposite of the Chiefs. You don't want, you know, a Tiger Woods, you know, one-on-one golf matchup unless you have Phil Mickelson.
Yeah.
So in this case, the Phil Mickelson of competitive eating decided, you know what, I'm going to compete anyway. And he made his way through the crowd, and he tried to hop up on the stage, and the security guard literally threw him up against the fence, and I was standing 4 feet away with my girlfriend at the time. It's crazy. So I don't know. I think that's a long monologue to say. Something with competitive eating would be fun. But I think, you know, you got to keep the playing field balanced. You can't have everybody eating something different from their own country because, you know, the digestive system and the inhalation of it would be a lot easier with some foods compared to others.
Yeah.
But I think if we're going to go as ridiculous as breakdancing over baseball, then it's time to get the IFOCE involved and have some kind of universal food. I don't know what that is. Maybe it's a McDonald's cheeseburger. That's pretty universal. And put that into the mix. That'd be a lot of fun to watch.
I like that. I think if I would attend a competitive eating situation, I don't know if I'd get within 4 feet like you talked about. But if I did, I'd have to borrow Andy Reid's face mask he wore earlier this year on the sideline. Just to protect myself.
No doubt. You know what they call that? There's actually a term for that in play-by-play of competitive eating.
Oh my.
I actually studied the terms for that, too. It's not called blowing chunks or vomiting or anything. It's called a reversal. And that's how they say it in very professional-sounding terms. Oh, it's Kobayashi with a reversal.
Oh, Lord.
That's at least 3.5 dogs coming out,
taking
off the score.
No.
And they judge the amount of reversal bits that came out and take away that much of your overall hot dog count. So I don't know how they do it. I don't know if they piece it together or what. But that's how they get it done.
How much does the judge get paid to figure that part out? Holy cow.
I know, right?
That's messed up. Maybe hot dogs for life or something. That is. I have to admit, that is, of the years we've had you on the show, Brian Haney, that is the grossest off-the-wall question we have ever discussed on this show. So well played. Well played.
You didn't know it was heading that way.
No, I did not. That's why it's called
Off the Wall.
That's right. That's why it's Off the Wall. Sometimes I lead people into something. Sometimes they lead me into something. So that's why I like it. Hey, man, we enjoy your company as always every Thursday on the show. Have fun with all the action you're going to call here. We're crossing our fingers, of course, with COVID and everything. But it looks like you're going to be very, very busy between now and next Thursday. And we'll look ahead to things next week with you.
Thanks a lot, buddy. Always a pleasure. Have a great day.
Take care. That's Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you each and every week by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.